From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, which means it's time for our reporter roundtable when we get you updated on the news that made headlines this last week. And today, our panel includes Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief at the Idaho Press and the voice of the I Am Boise blog, Audrey Dutton, Senior Investigative Reporter with the Idaho Capital Sun, Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Statesman, and Mia Maldonado, intern with the Idaho Capital Sun. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
So, Betsy, I want to start with you because there is another hearing set now for an abortion lawsuit in Idaho. This, though, is the federal lawsuit. So it will be the state of Idaho and the federal government meeting in court later this month, correct?
That's right. That will be August 22nd. And the judge has now set that for 9:30 that morning. And this is in federal court, as opposed to the three pending cases we already have in the Idaho Supreme Court. But this case in federal court is the one in which the U.S. Justice Department has sued the state of Idaho, saying that our 2020 abortion trigger law violates federal law, specifically the federal law that says hospitals that get Medicare funds, which pretty much hospitals do, have to provide emergency treatment to patients. And that this trigger law would prevent that emergency treatment being provided to pregnant patients, even with life-threatening or health-threatening conditions. Now, the state has not filed its response to the lawsuit yet, but the legislature has filed to intervene in the case as a party. And the latest filing in the case, I was just looking at the docket earlier today, is from the federal government opposing that, saying the legislature is already a party in this case, because in this case, the U.S. Department of Justice sued the state of Idaho, and the legislature is a part of the state of Idaho. So the court will have to decide whether they're going to have the legislature intervene. Either way, they could file a brief, and if the state consented, they could participate in arguments, even if they don't intervene. And the big issue here to be decided on the 22nd is, will the court put the trigger law on hold? Otherwise, it will take effect automatically on August 25th.
Okay. And so this is happening on the 22nd. And we should note, Betsy, that I am assuming that state funds are being used then for this lawsuit, as have numerous state funds for numerous different lawsuits.
Oh, yes. Of course, the Idaho Attorney General is obligated by the Idaho Constitution to defend Idaho's state laws in court. And that is what they're doing. And then when the legislature intervenes, they hire their own lawyers. They hire private counsel and bring them in and offer kind of Me Too arguments on the same side. And they pay for that, too. And that's also a state expense. In that case, it comes from something called the Legislative Legal Defense Fund, which the legislature created about 10 years ago and put a bunch of money into a couple of years back. And now they are getting ready to spend it.
Okay. So once we know what happens on August 22nd, whether the trigger law will be basically put on hold or not, from there then, Betsy, do we just wait to see what the next steps are in this court case?
Yes. And there are also next steps coming in the state court case. And in fact, I mean, they could come as soon as today. That the Idaho Supreme Court is also considering whether or not to put that same trigger law on hold, whether or not to continue putting on hold our Texas style law that allows relatives of an aborted fetus to sue doctors for minimum damages of $20,000, and whether or not to put a stay on a 2021 law that basically forbids abortions after 6 weeks of gestation. That's different from our trigger law, which forbids abortions at any stage of gestation and makes them all felonies, except for three very narrow exceptions for rape or incest in which the doctor has given a copy of a police report or to, quote, prevent the death of the mother. And those three exceptions, these lawsuits have pointed out, are not upfront exceptions. They're affirmative defenses that a doctor could give in court after being arrested and prosecuted as a defense. So there's a lot that could happen here.
Okay. And we could hear something on that today, as you said.
Could be today, could be next week. I'm checking those dockets every day.
I bet you are. Yeah. So Mia, welcome to our program. First time you've been on. So welcome. And I want to talk about an article you recently wrote, staying on the topic of abortion. And this is about religions and faith. And you spoke with some local faith leaders because there are differing views as when it comes to the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. So I did a story about Leap Housing's efforts with a local church, the Collister United Methodist Church. And when I reached out to the pastor, he was very progressive in his church ideology. And that kind of inspired me to reach out to other religious leaders on the topic of abortion, because a lot of the people in the Jewish community, they have had leaders speak at abortion rallies, or I know other faith leaders are very against abortion rights. And so I was able to contact different religious leaders in the Catholic Church, the Cathedral of the Rockies, so the local Methodist church in Boise. And I just kind of cold called all around in the Boise area. And then I also try to reach out to some folks in North Idaho. But it was definitely, I think there's a idea that abortion or anti-abortion ideology is typically associated with religion, but you know, there are also many religions that do not, or that support abortion rights. So it was just really important to hear both sides in this story.
And I think, Mia, you did a really good job of that. In fact, what was interesting about it is that, I mean, you know, in the article you talk about the Catholic diocese and other faith groups. I mean, they legally advocate to protect sanctity of life. However, there are other religious groups right here in Idaho that basically say abortion restrictions violate their religious freedom. And one being, as you mentioned, the Jewish faith. The Jewish faith does not believe that life begins at conception. And you talked with to Rabbi Dan Fink about this, and it was so interesting to read the article, and because you talked to so many faith leaders, and there is this broad spectrum of beliefs. So I think it's a must read, I think, for everyone who's wondering where religion falls into this, because you're right, it seems that we tend to group all religions into this kind of bowl or idea that, you know, they are all anti-abortion, and that is not necessarily the case.
Completely, yeah. And it's really interesting because different religious groups have different beliefs as to where life starts. For instance, the Muslim community, I think there is a Muslim community in Boise and greater Idaho, and they have a, or at least a lot of Muslim scholars have a unique perspective as to where life starts. And for them, life begins after 120 days of conception. So while the Catholic Church and the diocese in Boise claim that, you know, life starts at conception, other faith groups have months until they believe life starts. And so that's just something that's I ask every single group, like, where does life start? And there's no single answer. And I think that's where there's so much controversy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I want to shift gears and, Rachel, bring you into the conversation, because there is more news coming out around the Caldwell Police Department as new charges have been filed against a former officer. Can you update folks first, kind of give us a brief overview of what's been going on at the Caldwell Police Department for folks who may not be aware, but you know, these are federal investigations going on, right?
Yeah. The FBI has been investigating the Caldwell Police Department. We know at least since this spring, which was when the city confirmed it. So far, we do have some, you know, a couple outcomes from the investigation so far. No one's told me that it's wrapped up, so I think it's best to assume that it's, you know, it's still ongoing. But right now, the only officer who has been charged with anything is Joseph Holdley. And he is actually no longer with the police department. He was fired a few months ago, I believe in May. you know, due to the fact that he was indicted on two original charges by the U.S. District Court in Idaho. And so those two charges were related to him hitting a person he was arresting, and then later lying about it in a record. So that is what we knew before this week. And then what came out on Tuesday were two new charges. And both of the previous charges were from 2017. So those were, you know, those were a few years ago. But the most recent charges that were filed against him were from last year. And one of them was, you know, he basically allegedly tried to harass someone, and that came in the form of kind of dissuading them from reporting to a law enforcement officer. Mm. And then he was also charged with altering, destroying, mutilating, or concealing a record that was related to his pending case. So two kind of big things to come out of that. He actually had an arraignment hearing yesterday, and our Statesman reporter Alex Brzee went to that, and he pled not guilty. So he's probably going to have a jury trial for that. So yeah, that's what's happening in Caldwell. And then there was also a press conference that our reporter Alex went to earlier this week, and the new police mm-hmm. chief Rex Ingram basically said that he's fully cooperating with the FBI, and he kind of alluded to the previous administration not you know, complying as much as maybe they should have. And he also said that the investigation into Holdley was spurred by people within the department, so kind of his fellow officers.
Okay. Audrey, you have done a lot of reporting during the pandemic around Dr. Ryan Cole. Can you tell us about your latest article and how Dr. Cole has not been just all around the United States, but in different countries, talking about really his beliefs around the COVID vaccine, but frankly, the misinformation that he continues to talk about?
Sure. So as I think probably most of your listeners know, Dr. Cole is on our Central District Health Public Health Board in the Boise area and is a local pathologist. So he has given talks in Idaho, but also in England, France, Ireland, Brazil, 15 states, Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. Washington, D.C., and we also counted more than 70 podcast interviews. And this is, you know, in the past year and several months, I guess, and has had large audiences for some of those talks. One of the events he was part of had more than, I think we're at 2.4 million watches. People have watched it. And in those talks, he has shared information that doesn't have evidence behind it, or you know, he's drawing conclusions that aren't supported by the articles. In fact, one of the findings was when he's giving some of these presentations, he's showing these images that look, you know, they're like slides that you would see as a pathologist in your laboratory, and he's presenting them in the context of vaccines harming people's bodily organs. And I just did a reverse image search. It was pretty easy. And found that they were actually from journal articles about COVID-19 and how it can harm the body. Mm-hmm. And one of those articles, the author actually had come out and said, "Hey, all this shows is that this disease, I think, quote, really sucks. this is not a good disease to get. And that any extrapolation into vaccines causing the same harms would be wrong." And so I, as part of this story, I talked with a representative in Tennessee, as Cole has testified at the legislature there a few times, Representative Kumar, he's a physician, he's on a House committee there, and has questioned Cole. And he said he was bowled over by some of the statements Cole was making, and that it actually prompted him to think about maybe the legislature should consider having witnesses offer some evidence to back up testimony when they're making, you know, statements on this kind of stuff. And he is a very conservative politically legislator. So this, you know, this isn't a political thing. It's a medical thing for him. And as we were, as I was going through all of these talks, Cole has begun talking about monkeypox. So that's the virus and disease that's kind of spreading in the US and globally. And he refers to it obliquely as moneypox, says he doesn't recommend people get vaccinated, and suggested herbal remedies and antiparasitic drugs, and several other kind of claims that are maybe not provable. So that's where he's landing now, is on the monkeypox concerns.
Okay. Betsy, let's talk a little bit about the race for attorney general, because some developments in this, one being that there was a new Democratic candidate named at the end of last month, I think around July 26th or so. But this Democratic candidate has Republican backing.
That's right. And this is an unusual time for there to be a new Democratic nominee named. After all, the primary was over in May. Mm-hmm. But what happened was that the Democratic candidate who ran in the primary, Steve Scanlon, was a placeholder. And so he withdrew, and the party named a longtime Idaho attorney, Tom Arkush, who has not been a recognized Democrat at all, in fact, has been an independent for many years, was briefly a Republican this year, registered as a Democrat a week before, as the new Democratic nominee. And so he will be facing former Congressman Raul Labrador, who's the Republican nominee, in the November election. And there have been a few developments since Arkush joined the race. He's a very prominent and well-known Idaho attorney, and he's been drawing a lot of support from the legal community and also from perhaps the more moderate Republicans, those who perhaps aren't of the same faction of the Idaho Republican Party as former Congressman Labrador. And he also has had a really blistering fundraising pace. And one thing that I found quite interesting was back in November, when former Congressman Labrador announced that he was going to run for Idaho Attorney General, 2 weeks in, he put out a press release saying he had raised $100,000 in his first 2 weeks. Mm. Well, so has Tom Arkush. In fact, he raised $105,000 in his first 2 weeks. And of course, the former congressman has tremendous fundraising ability. But an attorney who's really not a politician, has never run for statewide office before, setting the same pace is a little bit surprising. And then there was another development this week, and that was that he named 5 campaign co-chairs. And campaigns do that. That's not normally news. But in this case, they are 2 Democrats, 2 Republicans, and an independent. And the 2 Republicans are former longtime elected Republican Idaho State Treasurer Lydia Justice Edwards and former longtime elected Republican Secretary of State Ben Asursa. Ben Asursa is extremely well known in Idaho.
Yes.
And he told me that he has never before openly endorsed a Democrat against a Republican. This is the first time. And he said he did so because he feels that the rule of law is under attack, with things like the big lie about the 2020 election, and that former Congressman Labrador's announced intentions to treat the Idaho Attorney General's office as a more political post and ally with the most conservative legislators to bring lawsuits over national issues and so forth, would not support the rule of law. And he said that it wasn't about politics. It was about what's best for the state. I think it was a big surprise, and it was pretty interesting.
I think it's very interesting, Betsy, and I think this is going to be, you know, a race to watch. This is not something that we see in the state of Idaho, Republicans backing a Democratic candidate. As you mentioned, I mean, yes, he only, you know, registered to be a Democrat a week before he was named, but still, this is, I think this speaks volumes.
During the press conference, one of the Democratic co-chairs, who he named, former Idaho Attorney General Tony Park, said he thought that Cecil Andrus might be rolling over in his grave, but because there were more Republicans standing there than there were Democrats.
Wow. So, Rachel, it seems Canyon County employees are leaving at record numbers. What is going on?
Yeah, so the latest that I know, and there could have been more resignations since I wrote this, was that the county currently has 64 vacant positions. And that, is kind of is unusual for them. That's a high number of vacant positions. And, their HR director said, people are leaving and they believe it's because of the low wages that they're being paid, or not so much the low wages, but low compared to Ada County, City of Nampa, and City of Boise. As this is kind of especially concerning to Sheriff Kieran Donahue in Canyon County. You know, he's saying it's becoming really difficult for him to, manage the jail and patrol units and such, because, he has people mostly leaving for higher wages in the Nampa Police Department. The latest proposal in the county is a $12,000 per year raise for each one of the county's 900 workers, about 900 workers. So that's quite substantial. But again, the HR director, Katie Rice, basically said, we're at this point where we need something drastic like this. And of course, like anything, I imagine this conversation about how much to spend on raises is going to continue as the budget public hearings continue in Canyon County. Also the raises would apply to the elected officials themselves. And one of the county commissioners said in a recent meeting that she's gotten concerned constituent emails saying that the elected officials just want to pass these raises in the budget to give themselves a raise. So she suggested that the elected officials forego a raise. And then that kind of spurred Sheriff Donahue to basically defend himself and say he needs a raise. He does. I have a document that lists the salaries of the Nampa police chief, Caldwell police chief, and Donahue, and he does make less than them. He makes $124 a year. Chief Huff in Nampa makes 166, and Ingram makes in Caldwell makes 154,000. So, it was kind of interesting to see an elected official, advocating for raises on behalf of his employees, but also himself. So we'll see where that goes. There is a public hearing next week on the budget, and I imagine, I've heard from the county commissioners that they're already getting emails about this raise proposal. So we'll see what happens.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch this. And I mean, a $12,000 a year raise per county employee is big, but then it makes you wonder just how low wages are if you're looking at doing such a significant raise.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what the HR director said in one of the meetings is, I know that this is a lot of money. This is a big budget ask, but, she was worried if they don't do anything now that the county's just going to fall further and further behind area wages and then, just going to have to suffer. And then, we always hear about growth. So, this is in a county that's experiencing, unprecedented growth still and, missing or having lots of vacant positions is not helpful.
And Betsy, we have about 2 minutes left and I want to get to the PACT Act really quickly because you had an opportunity to do an article about both of our Idaho senators who voted against the PACT Act, which is for healthcare for veterans who were exposed to things like burn pits and the such while they were deployed. So what is the reasoning behind our senators voting against this?
Basically, our senators cited the same arguments that Senator Pat Toomey cited, claiming that Democrats had somehow put in a slush fund in there for $400 billion in unrelated spending. That is kind of an exaggeration of a budgetary rule that's included within the bill that has been there the whole time, that has to do with what Congress could do in future years, potentially. But there is no slush fund in the bill. And the bill did pass with bipartisan support and was signed into law. And it has been, the VA has called it the largest expansion of veterans health care in the United States in at least 30 years. It is very significant. Veterans will no longer have to go through this very long, excruciating, and almost impossible process to prove that certain cancers and other conditions they have were service-related. And this is not only for Iraq and Afghanistan, for the burn pits. It also has to do with Agent Orange. It affects a whole lot of veterans.
Well, I want to thank all of you for your reporting and for your time to come on the show today. I always appreciate you. We've been talking with Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief of the Idaho Press, as well as the voice of the I Am Boise blog, Audrey Dutton, Senior Investigative Reporter with Idaho Capital Sun, Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Statesman, and Mia Maldonado, intern with the Idaho Capital Sun. And before we wrap up, Mia, I know we welcomed you to the show, but I also want to say good luck with you because as you go on your next journey, because this is your last day with the Idaho Capital Sun. So thank you for joining us today, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.